Ladies and gentlemen, Mesdames and Messieurs, welcome back to At the End of the Day. The 2-Bit Podcast is the name of the channel. At the End of the Day is the name of the show. I am your host, Jason Marinchuk, and we are joined again by my friend and yours, Thomas777. Hi, Thomas.
Hello.
How are you feeling? I forgot to ask you in the pre-show. You're feeling?
I feel pretty good, man. Like I was on the road a few weeks ago, you know, and road trips are kind of hard on me. But, you know, and I got to hit the road again in a couple of weeks. But I'm doing better, man. Like, I was just feeling rough for a little bit. I mean, which is kind of the nature of the beast with my rheumatoid stuff. But I'm all right.
Which is good to hear. I know you just got back from the VDARE conference.
Yeah.
You were talking about the pictures, which are fantastic. You're sharing over at 7. What's your Substack called again? It is...
It's real thomas777.substack.com.
It's a 3-7 mafia is the name of the podcast. It's the name of the feed. You also shared a article or a piece, a semi piece, whatever you want to call it, about the old resistance, which is what I have brought you on to talk about today, because that was a term that, you know, I like terms that make me lean in. You know, there's always good sort of mimetic qualities about certain placement of words. It's also something I didn't know really anything about. You know, there's always gaps in my knowledge, especially when it comes down to like things like Rhodesia, South Africa, and a few other areas of the world. So who's better to have on to talk about these things than yourself, of course. So why don't we get into that? What is the old resistance? What are you on about now?
And the reason I coined that term is because I think the genealogy of political movements is important, maybe for all kinds of reasons. And particularly today, I do a lot of gatekeeping, at least with the people I associate with and what I'm trying to accomplish. And I mean, first of all, there's a lot of just like jokers who, you know, claim to be like right wing, but really it's just kind of like about making jokes about black people on the internet, or, you know, the fact that they're irritated by some policy or another, or they just or they just like MAGA stuff as kind of like a culture jamming thing. I mean, which is fine. I don't give a fuck if people are up on that, but it's got really nothing to do with us. And I get really fucking irritated when people act like, you know, the right wing is this thing that came about in like 2016, you know, or they have no idea like the heritage of it and what really the kind of foundational principles were and are, and how we got to this point. And if you're like me, you know, I've been committed to these things my entire life. I mean, since I was like 15 years old, you know, so I think it's important, you know, not because my own testimony is so great, but, you know, I do have a long memory because I'm getting old. I think it's important to, you know, kind of clarify these things just in terms of ideological purity, you know, but also to make people understand that, you know, what we're committed to is something that does have like a deep heritage. And the old kind of like dissident right movement, you know, I'm talking about people who are genuinely like ops of the regime. You know, I'm not talking about like John Birchers or whatever, like people, you know, the people who, the vestigial remnants of America First, like after 1945, you know, the guys who kind of came to constitute, you know, like the white nationalist anti-segregation movement, you know, like the guys who mobilized under the swastika, like, these guys, I think, are given a fair shake in terms of historical memory. I mean, there's plenty of like jokers who are basically just like pranksters and culture jammers who are just like literally talking shit. I mean, I frankly think like Rockwell was one of those. I don't know why people like Rockwell was this great guy. He was literally like a vaudevillian running around talking shit. You know, like it was, you know, I mean, it was the whole thing was ridiculous, but the core of the core of like National Socialism after 45, to me, obviously, like Francis Yockey looms very large. A guy named Harold Mattel, speaking of Rockwell, Rockwell pretty much like appropriated like all of Mattel's optics. Mattel didn't mobilize under the swastika, but he, you know, he mobilized direct action. That would turn out, you know, him and his people to fight, you know, like the Jewish war veterans and the Communist Party USA, you know, and they were very, very active in you know, kind of developing a pretty sophisticated like media presence for the time. And Mattel was pro-Soviet, not because he liked the communists, but he said he had a Yockeyist view of the world. You know, and he's like, look, he's like, you better hope the Soviet Union doesn't go away, because if it does, you know, you're looking at, you know, you're looking at a complete, you know, Zionist dominance of what's rapidly ossifying into like a world governing system, which of course is absolutely true. But Mattel, he actually knew George Sylvester Viereck, who, you know, was a German national and a World War One veteran and, you know, an active national socialist. He'd been active with the Bund and stuff. Mattel distributed Yockey's early copy, you know, so eccentric as he might have been, you know, he had kind of he had a pretty deep understanding of sort of the philosophical rigor that was required if, you know, we were going to survive as an ideological cadre. More familiar to people, Harold Covington, who only died a few years ago, he was a controversial guy, and he didn't do himself any favors. He said a lot of stupid things to kind of insinuate himself in the media. You know, especially after the shooting of Reagan and after most, and more kind of in more living memory, like after the Dylann Roof incident, he said a bunch of dumb things. Like, we're going to see a lot more of this when the race war comes. Like, something that's not constructive. But something Covington did do was, after Rockwell was killed, Covington reconstituted the National Socialist White People's Party. And he's like, we're not going to go around calling ourselves Nazis. That's ridiculous. You know, like, he during kind of the ascendancy of him to prominence in subcultural circles, he did a lot to raise awareness about the situation in Rhodesia. You know, and there was really what put Soldier of Fortune magazine on the map was two things. There was a communist revolution underway in Aden, I believe, some sultanate, okay. And the first kind of circular that Robert K. Brown put out was, you know, looking for men who had combat experience to, you know, staff the Sultan's army against his nascent communist insurgency. But what really kind of put Soldier of Fortune on the map was, you know, the call for men to go fight in Rhodesia, you know, with the perennially outgunned and outmanned in numbers, not quality, you know, Rhodesian armed forces. And Covington said, hey, look, he's like, you know, talk is cheap. You know, if you're a real national socialist, if you're really committed to, you know, kind of returning to serve against the communists, you know, like Rhodesia is like where our fight is. Okay. And Covington went to Rhodesia. There's a guy named Richard Biederman, who was a National Socialist White People's Party member. He joined the Rhodesian SAS. You know, and he was killed in action. And a friend of mine, who I collaborated with before, he married a Salvadorian woman, and he took it upon himself to kind of document the oral histories of a lot of these like Salvadorian right wing fighters, you know, who fought under Dubuque and against the communists and stuff. In recent years, my friend, he's been kind of trying to document the lives and times of these old resistance guys, and he's, in particular, he's kind of putting together a biography of Biederman, and that's something we're going to talk about in the next pod episode. But, you know, guys like him, that's really kind of a model of, I think, what our people within our cadre should be, okay? You know, definitely, like, action-oriented people, but not in, like, a foolish way. You know, the people who are not averse to violence, but, you know, who understand that it's got to be channeled, you know, appropriately and constructively. And also just, you know, guys like Biederman were outlaws. They didn't give a fuck if people thought it was, like, weird to ride under the swastika. They didn't give a fuck if, like, that upset, like, bougie sensibilities. You know, there is an aspect of, like, rock and roll to this. Like, you should not care, like, what you shouldn't care like what people, once you pay me to a certain age, you should care about what you think about yourself, not really what other people think of you. You know, like I, you know, and it's like, I'm always hearing from people like, well, yeah, those guys are the right idea, but those optics are bad. It's like, according to who? According to you? Like, you should ride under what you want. And I'm proud to ride under the swastika, man. Like, why wouldn't I be? You know, because people don't like it, or it makes bougies mad. I mean, like, the fuck out of here. But you know, not enough is guys like Maddow, guys like Biederman, I mean, guys like Yaki himself. You know, not enough is discussed about those guys. And this also played a real role, man, in there was a domestic aspect to the Cold War. Like, regardless if you, I mean, obviously, like, I've got a heterodox view of it, you know, of the Cold War as like a world historical paradigm. But where the rubber meets the road, you know, there really were communist agitators in America who were trying to crush us. And, you know, they broke with the Soviets, interestingly. I mean, that's a whole other kind of complex tangent I don't want to get into right now because it's too far afield. But, you know, the National Socialist White People's Party, kind of like their finest hour in Greensboro, North Carolina, this outfit calling themselves the Communist Workers' Party, they were an offshoot of this brand called the Asian Studies Group, which after 68 they'd been affiliated with the Communist Party USA, which was obviously, you know, directly funded and kind of organized by Moscow. After 68, everything kind of changed. These people kind of reconstituted as a, you know, a self-identified Maoist grouping, and their big ambition was to radicalize Black folks in the Deep South, or presumably, you know, efforts at labor organization had failed, and in their view, you know, this was kind of like most reactionary and like racist repository of kind of a, you know, like reactionary American regime. So the Communist Workers Party went down to Greensboro. You know, they started agitating in the ghetto. They started agitating in the textile factories and stuff. And they declared that they were gonna literally kill the local KKK down there. So the National Socialist White People's Party said, that's not happening. You know, they showed up in force to like back up the Klan. They shot it out with the communists, you know, and killed about five of them. You know, these guys were acquitted for self-defense, grounds of self-defense. I think some got brought up on manslaughter charges and copped to a lesser included offense. But as it may, like, it was a big deal at the time. And Covington's whole notion was, you know, look, like, if you, you know, you're not in the game, and, you know, like, you're not any kind of American I'm going to stand with if you're not literally gonna like return the serve when communists say they're gonna kill you in your own fucking country, you know. And I mean, that's the kind of stuff I think that is like most positive about the old resistance. You know, people shouldn't be like organizing torchlight rallies and, you know, like being corny. But what they should be doing is like when one of these fucking people like that crazy commie mayor in Charlottesville who was like saying he was going to like physically harm our people to try to defend monuments, like, yeah, you've got to return the serve on that shit, and you've got to go down and like do what you can to defend those artifacts. And when our people are under attack, you know, like, that's one of the reasons why like I travel so much, man, is to kind of like stay up with, you know, people in various locales far and wide, so that, you know, we do have kind of like ongoing lines of communication, so that like if they do need help and support in any way, prosaic or profound, you know, we can get that to them. And, you know, it shouldn't, people should think more about direct action in terms of self-defense and defense of our people, you know, and returning the serve when we're threatened, you know, and less about this bullshit of like, yeah, we're gonna convince the normies and wake people up. Like, no, we're not the fucking Jehovah's Witnesses. You know, we don't want those people. And if we had them, what the fuck would we do? Start a mega church? Like, so that's basically what I'm up on. And I'm basically, I'm not, I mean, basically, yeah, I'm like a historian or like a historical writer. I mean, that's the way I think of myself. And so I try to like write more about this stuff and, you know, present kind of a more coherent picture of it. And yeah, that's what I'm working on with regards to that.
Let's just do a little bit of housekeeping. Thank you, everyone who's chiming in the chat. Send us your super chats. We will read them out when we have a chance to, either in the middle of the show or the end of the show. We have $5 from Arthur Rimbaud. It's nice to chill after a busy few weeks. Been reading some Guignol. It's been giving me a lot to think about. Cheers, Thomas. Cheers, boys. Cheers to you, sir. I see some other questions in the chat. Send us your super chats. We will read them out when we have a chance. And get Thomas's response on things. If support this show or you can support Thomas directly, I just re-upped my subscription to Thomas this weekend.
Thanks.
It's important to do these things, folks. Just speaking personally, I know it's a labor of love and we're not looking to get rich, but we are looking to keep the lights on. So do appreciate each and every one of you who has been sending us support. You can also go down and find a link to Fox and Sons Coffee. I know, Thomas, you got sent a bag of coffee recently. I haven't had a chance. I'm in Australia, so I haven't had a chance to try it. But I do love those boys out there. And you can use a 2-bit as a coupon code. Get 15% off orders over $30. That helps them out, helps us out, helps everyone out. So it's a good deal. All right. Here's some questions that come up in my mind, and maybe we can get into Rhodesia at some point. But I'm thinking that in the current state of affairs, especially in the United States, why these things are important, to, like as you said, to counterserve these things as we see them crop up. You know, we're starting to see the effects of having the Weatherman Network was prominent in the 1960s and 70s, then kind of got dispersed, and now we're seeing elements of it show up in the United States government. You know, Obama has always been sort of linked to the Weatherman, and which is a proto-communist kind of group, and we're starting to see that if you don't do something at the right time, you get to inherit all the downstream horrible effects. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that. The Minutemen and the Weather Underground, there were two prominent groups in the United States, and then see where that takes us.
Yeah, I just, the other week, I just went to visit Aaron Taylor, like at his home. Him and his wife were kind enough to host me and some of the fellas. You know, and he's a model of the type of person I'm talking about who, you know, kind of we need as partisans. And, you know, when he was literally like a teenager, like he, you know, he said he's from Chicago. So like we got some things in common, you know, we come from kind of like the same, we come from like similar places. Like he's a pagan and I'm kind of more inclined to like Third Reich stuff than he is, you know, just like optically in other ways. But, you know, we connect well. He's like a, you know, we got similar background and he's a Chicago guy. But, you know, he said like when he was like ripping and running, you know, like in gang banging and stuff, you know, in the 60s, he says that like he realized, you know, he said he realized when like the race riders jumped off, he realized like it wasn't like local hood dudes who were like making this happen. He said he realized it was, you know, it was like white radicals and these like Jewish extremists who were like literally like, you know, kind of like the proto Soros Inc. model of, you know, finding radical cadres on the ground and provoking incidents that, you know, that ultimately was like quite literally threatening, you know, to ethnically cleanse like white Chicago. You know, so he said that, you know, in those days, probably about like half of like the active mobs on the street were like still white. So, you know, they had some kind of like ready-made soldiery to like return that serve. But then, you know, Taylor's like, he's like, I realized, man, he's like, you know, we can't like let this stand, you know? So he clicked up with the Minutemen, who were the outfit of a guy named Robert DePew, who Taylor admits like was a psychopath. And like, he tried to murder Taylor later on. Like he sent some guys, literally Taylor, like after things went to hell with the Minutemen organization, Taylor moved back to Chicago. he was like staying at his parents' house, and like to, and like Depew like sent guys to his house like to throw shots at him. I mean, the guy was a fucking wacko. But you know, the '60s and seventies, like things were lit in the way they're not today. But you know, in any event, you know, Taylor's like kind of his whole ethos is like, you know, you're either like committed to this shit or you're not. You know, and if you're saying like, oh, I can't defend our people when required because that's not respectable, or it might, you know, it might like, what will the neighbors think? Like figuratively or literally, you know, it's like, what the fuck are you doing? This is just some, like some hobby you like that of yours that you like to fantasize about or something. So, I mean, that's, he's absolutely right about that. And, you know, like I said, like, I'm definitely not some like pagan guy, but a lot of my friends are, they're like up on that, you know, and I, but the point is like, you know, Taylor was up early in an early sense, in early on, like he was very committed to, you know, creating social capital, like alternative structures to the regime, you know, for people to, but, you know, by whereby like we can make a living and without relying on enemy structures and without indexing with enemy institutions, which was a lot harder when he was my age. He's about 30 years old than me. I mean, like, it's gotten a lot easier since we have information technology to assist us. But, you know, like he, you know, he was up on stuff before it was like really, you know, kind of but before it was people like thought this way in our cadre, like in basic terms, you know. And so that's, and you know, he had some of the same senses that Covington did. Covington, after in the 1980s and early 90s, Covington, I don't know if this is because I don't know Covington's background, like his confessional heritage. I speculate he's Catholic and he grew up in the Deep South. He always had this like love of the IRA and all things Irish. He clicked up with the IRA in the 80s and 90s, which at the time I thought was somewhat misguided. I don't want to refight the troubles on a live stream. And I there's certainly plenty of guys, like Irish Republican guys, who are like down as fuck and are like friends of mine. But at the time I thought, it's like, look, if I don't advise clicking up with any paramilitaries in that milieu, you know, to advance like our shit, but such that we did index with them. It was the loyalist side, frankly, who I think, you know, there was kind of a natural affinity. But be as it may, in later years, I realized Covington was in fact onto something. Like the provost had kind of a complete support structure for their people. Not, you know, even in addition, obviously, to kind of like constituting the spear point of the long campaign that they were fighting against their enemies. Like the politics of it don't really matter. Like, and I'm not suggesting that, you know, we take on some sort of violent, spontaneous campaign against the government. Again, I'm speaking in terms of, you know, returning the serve defensively, defending ourselves and defending our people in common. But, you know, but that aside, you know, like I said, I think part of what Covington was up on was the kind of social capital that the provos were creating around their movement. And that's essential, you know, and that's, like I said, that's like what I'm always up on. And that's proceeding splendidly. You know, that's not a problem that we have. Which I'm very pleased to say, but I think even people who are, you know, kind of indexed correctly with such things, I don't know if they understand the lore behind it and why exactly we're doing this. And I'm a guy I admire a lot, is Gusty Spence, who students of Ulster will know something about. You know, he always made the point that early on in the Troubles, when he was in prison, he said that these like young loyalist headers would show up and he'd be like, why are you here? And they'd be like, oh, you know, I planted a car bomb, or like I killed a guy who was foreign on me. He's like, no. I mean, like, why are you here? Like, why are we fighting this war? Why are we fighting the provos? And he said, like, they couldn't tell him. And he's like, well, that's, you got to spend your time here, like when we're locked up, like figuring out like why we're doing this, you know, and come back and talk to me when you're ready to learn about why we're doing this. And I that's profound. Okay. And it's, whether you're engaged in an active conflict or not, or whether you're simply preparing for one, or whether you're simply engaged in kind of a low intensity, you know, condition other than warfare with the regime, like we are, it's fundamental to kind of always clarify and refine like who we are and what we are doing. So that's part of the equation too.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really important part to get to. It's quite often with the stuff I'm talking about, the open question is always, and then what? So, you know, you come up with this idea, we're going to do this, we're going to spread the message, we're going to create this, and yada, yada, yada. I'm like, okay, and then what? Like, what precedes that? If you don't have, you know, 1,000-year, 5,000-year kind of viewpoint, if you're not trying to build something that's going to outlast you or be able to be sustained by future generations, then this is just a sort of an ego vanity piece.
Yeah, and you're pissing into the wind. Yeah. Right. Or you're just some like Republican who's like, yeah, I don't want no trans people in schools, or like, I don't want, you know, there's too much immigration. It's like, yeah, okay, I mean, whatever, man. Like, we're not trying to like board our way out of shit or trying to like clean up the public schools. We don't want anything to do with that bullshit. You know, we're creating something totally different. And we don't want to fuck with regime shit, like, at all. You know, we're seceding from it. You know, like, it's got nothing to do with us. You know, like, well, God willing, and, you know, with the blessing of Providence, we'll get to a point where, like, the regime can't fuck with us. We'll just be too strong, you know, and that's where we're going.
Yeah, I think... I was going to do a super chat here that I think is be apropos, but I think one of the things that along my journey of the last 10 years or so has been constantly trying to break sort of my liberal framing, and realizing that you have to break the frame in order to see this thing for what it is. And then once you see it for what it is, then you can start to make moves more accurately. Because oftentimes, and it frustrates me when every time I hit a wall with this, or kind of, you know, go over one more mountain and see there's more mountains to climb. But mentally and conceptually, oftentimes you can still get hung up in this, right? And you find out you're like, no, I'm still within regime space. Like, I'm still thinking regime. I'm still in some ways cooperating to the regime by resisting it, or getting frustrated or coming up with things that are going to be anti-regime. Like, as you're saying, parallelism to kind of see the regime for what it is and say, yeah, no, we're not that. And we're not that, not just out of reaction, but we're not that out of principle. We're not, it's like, you might as well, it's, you're comparing, you know, men to amoebas. Like, it's these things.
Well, yeah. And it's like, culturally, we've got nothing in common with these fucking people, and they don't have anything we want. And, right. I guess it's easier for me, man. And I realize too, I'm not trying to like talk some shit or be flippant. Like, I realize, especially people who are kind of locked into some corporate job that they need to like support their family, you know, I'm sure that plants like seeds of doubt, especially because like kind of the setting for their life is something that's very much like regime oriented. Like, I was always like a slim minority on the ground where I live. I never liked going to school. I never liked the police. Like, later in life, like, you know, like, you know, I had like a really bad drug problem for a minute, and then like I, you know, got convicted of a couple felonies. Like, I realized, like, basically when I was like 12, like, the regime doesn't like me and I don't like it, and like the people who like it don't like me. So it was like I never had to like kind of get over this hump of like, you know, like kind of quitting people who like, oh, are my wife's friends, or like, or not indexing with people anymore who like I work with at some big company. I mean, I realize, but it's like at the same time, it's like, you know what, man, like I've had to make other sacrifices in my life that weren't really easy. You know, it's like, you've got to decide at some point if you're going to live historically or worry about, you know, keeping up with the Joneses and, you know, and making sure the neighbors don't think bad things during like the 70 or 80 years you're on this planet, you know, and it's, that should be a no brainer. Wouldn't, if you're like at all engaged in life. But yeah, I realize there's a thing for some people.
Let's see here. Russell T. Trombone sent a $5 super chat, asks, can T provide a succinct summary of his worldview and how that relates to the regalia he often displays? Cheers, fellows. Thank you, Russell.
I mean, yeah, I'm pro-white. I'm pro-Western civilization. And I like stuff that's cool and that possesses like beauty and power. So I like National Socialism. I don't like communists. I don't like faggot stuff. I don't like fucking gross regime stuff. It's that simple. Like, why? What? Like, why would I be into fucking regime stuff?
It seems fairly succinct for me.
It's like, yeah, it's like, oh, rock and roll. These are the same guys who say the same guys who say like swastikas are bad. The same guys are like, yeah, rock and roll is for fags. You know, like that's, you shouldn't listen to that. You know, you shouldn't be into that. You know, you should be into bullshit. You know, like that we're into. Like, yeah, so because it's cool. Because everybody likes that stuff because it's awesome. And like, you're not supposed to like it because it's like natural slaves like hate that shit.
Someone just said in my feed recently that there is no JQ, and I think if I'm reading that correctly, meaning that there should be no question about the J's at this point. I just messaged our friend Pete Canonis last night because I finally had a watershed moment with it. Where I'm like, yeah, I'm over it. I'm done. Like, this group of people need to be addressed one way or the other.
I mean, it's something that should go without saying. I mean, it's like, people are weird about it in this country. And one of the things, I mean, America's kind of strange in a lot of ways, but one of the things that America rejected a lot of the things it inherited from England, but one of the things that it holds to is like this idea of like, you know, of euphemism, and like there's certain things we don't talk about like in public life. And it's like, I swear to God, it's like not even like a moral commitment with a lot of people. It's like, well, it's just not polite to talk about the Jewish people. It's like, what? Like, you know, so it's like, oh, well, we just need to convince these people of the merit of our position. It's like, you don't get it. You know, it's like an existential, there's like an ontology here that is critical implications, you know, and it has nothing to do with like people's like social prejudices, like who you like or don't like. I mean, because that's not the nature of political enmity. But I mean, I don't object to people using it as shorthand for like a complex issue if they want to. I don't use that term just because like I don't think it's particularly descriptive or illustrative. But it is somewhat peculiar and euphemistic. Yeah.
Okay, Rhodesia. Tell me in 30 minutes or less. Give me a Rhodesian history lesson.
I mean, it was
South Africa.
I did a series of Canonis on this. I mean, it was just or like a two-part episode. I mean, basically, like Rhodesia, what's now like Zimbabwe, it was it's literally named for Cecil Rhodes. Okay, like it was the British coveted the Cape Colony, and that's why they went to war with the Trek Boers. You know, and everybody knows about that. You know, it was a very tragic situation, but basically. Like basically to control the Cape, like you needed Rhodesia, okay? Like white colonial Africa, that for geostrategic reasons as well as practical ones, like Rhodesia had to be held down. Rhodesia was different than the Republic of South Africa. The Republic of South Africa, it always was very adjacent to National Socialism, and even I think Terry Blanche was kind of a buffoon. I think he had some good people around him, and like, I mean, they repped the swastika. I think the real hero of the Boer cause was Clive Derby Lewis. He's a fascinating guy. I suggest people. I posted this. He died of cancer some years back. This one kind of young documentarian did a series of interviews with him. I highly recommend it. Every time I post it, like, I guess no one's got the attention span for it, but he's a great man. But anyway, Rhodesia became kind of this highly publicized cause. America was losing the Cold War, obviously, by 73 in military terms. Rhodesia was under assault by the communists, as was Portuguese Angola. And Ian Smith and Salazar were very close allies. This indexed in various ways with South Africa's grand strategy, but there was tensions there. Like, not the least of which were, you know, a holdover from the Boer War. But Rhodesia was very beleaguered. Rhodesia never had the same kind of race codes that South Africa did. They practiced, you know, the color line was scrupulously honored, you know, but there was a lot of Rhodesian forces consisted of like black scouting companies, like led by white officers. You know, and there wasn't like bad blood there, you know. So it was Rhodesia was definitely a white man's country, like overtly so. but it wasn't as simple as the people who slated it for destruction like wanted to make it, you know. And so the call went out, you know, that that famous ad, "Be a man among men, join the Rhodesian army," that ran in Soldier of Fortune. And a couple hundred guys from all over the world, like, signed up to fight in Rhodesia. And the Americans who went there, they were a combination of, like, non-vets looking for action. Guys like Richard Biederman, who felt that, like, this was the place where, you know, the white man should be fighting the war against the communists, you know, not in some far-flung third world country that had nothing to do with him. There's an interesting book called The Crippled Eagles, because that's what like the Americans that all hang out together who were fighting in Rhodesia. But it's kind of it very much kind of like mercenary culture in the 70s, like orbited around Africa. And in those days it was an outlaw culture. It wasn't this like corporate bullshit like Triple Canopy and Blackwater and stuff. You know, it was guys like Colonel Callan, it was guys like Biederman, it was guys like Mad Mike Hoar, like literally saying, like, you know, we like you begging some money off of the British government or off the State Department, saying, like, look, we're gonna take communist scalps, you know, we're all you got, you know, like basically like stake us to like go do this. We can buy some weapons and ammo and boots, you know. And so it attracted a certain kind of man. But the you know, Rhodesia became the fact that the crown turned its back on them. I mean, opposed to like Salazar, who got all of his people out of Angola. I mean, it just you know, it became kind of a symbol, you know, kind of like the best of the white race's warrior instincts, and you know, our kind of willingness to return to serve, you know, even when, you know, grossly outnumbered, as well as you know, kind of an example, like the kind of raw like treason of the elites in the West, and how they don't actually give a fuck about the survival of our people. I mean, that's why. And like I said, it was an interesting. I like Biederman for a lot of reasons, not just because, I mean, he was a hero, but he, you know, he was a guy who went against the grain. You know, he's like, you know, he was like a winner. He was like a high school athlete, you know, from a good family. And he's like, fuck you, you know, I'm gonna ride under the swastika, like, fuck you, I'm gonna go fight in Rhodesia. You know, it wasn't like, you know, it's like that's part of what being like a white man is. It's like doing your own thing, you know, like it's like it's people got to think about that, you know, like it's stop worrying about like optics and like I don't want to say the wrong thing, you know. So that's why I spent a lot of time with Rhodesia.
Let's get into that topic of white, because I think both you and I share similar ideas on this, that you know, I'm not an ethnostate guy. At the same time, I acknowledge that white, the way that the enemy uses it, is there's something accurate to it, because white is not just a skin color or a people. It's also, it's not just an ethnic, it's an ethos in many ways.
Yeah. And, well, I mean, it's problematic. I do agree with E. Michael Jones. Like it's idiotic the way like people internalize too much the way commies talk about, you know, like white people. Like to them, like anyone who's like not black or like Mexican is white, you know, like a guy like some guy from Kazakhstan is white, you know, like it's fucking retarded. Like when I say, I mean, generally in America, like when you say like white person, you're based, unless you're in a place like Chicago, is different because like white people all like click up on the street because we're outnumbered, and it's just this like weird dynamics here. But like when you say but people here do like identify by like tribe, like, yeah, I'm Polish, I'm Italian. Like when I say white, it's because I'm a Peckerwood. I'm like old stock, like Protestant. You know, like
a wasp. Yeah,
yeah. Dissenter. Like wasps are high church guys who join country clubs. They don't want me. I'm like Ulster Scott. So like them, like I'm halfway to being Irish. So I'm not.
Hey, you get to go to castles. So you know.
Yeah. No. Exactly. But I mean, like my. You know, my ethnic flag is the Blessing Banner, you know. So it's like, so if I talk about like white pride and stuff, like I'm talking about like my tribe. Like it's not to say that like, yeah, there is like a white race, like biologically and like politically, but it is like there's too much like people too much take like internalize like the enemy's like strictures when they act like everybody every like again like everybody who's not like obviously black or like Mexican is white. Like that's fucking retarded. And that's not how. Plus too, it's like outlook. Like there's guys who, especially like in the Middle East, like you'll find guys who are like as blonde and blue as I am, but they're like they've got like an Oriental perspective. You know, like there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's their heritage, but like it's not. You know, so yeah, it's part of you know, but it's but that's kind of a that's kind of a different that's kind of a different question. But yeah, I take ethno seriously. You know, like your discrete heritage is important, but within like a broader pastiche, like yeah, I mean, obviously, like the West stands together or it falls. I mean, that's why you know that's why the Waffen SS is like so inspirational and stuff. You know, but it's like, but I but when I use white, like I said, like to me, because I'm one of these like American like the center prod types, like it has like a distinct meaning, you know. Just like in America, like if you say like black, you're talking about like a dude who descended from like southern slaves, you know, like a guy with dark skin. Like that's why shit libs like prove their illiteracy, like Obama's black. It's like not remotely, man. Like that's fucking retarded. Like he's it's not, yeah. So it's, you know, but yeah. So I don't disagree with you.
Yeah, I think maybe we can dig into this a little bit too, because I think this is where people get hung up. It's, you know, I would much rather roll with a bunch of radical black people, American blacks, than roll with a bunch of sort of mushy white conservatives. Because at least if we're sharing a certain ethos, the ethnic question becomes a lower priority. And as we're saying with Rhodesia, you can have a white man's country that's ruled, that has a white man's principle and a white man's outlook and functionality, but have other people living in there as well.
Well, yeah, that's why I got to deal with black folks all the time, because like where I live, and like I scrupulously honor the color line, and I make that pretty clear. But I mean, I get along fine with these people. It's like it's kind of like coded into us. We have to get along, so we've lived among each other for 500 fucking years. You know, so it's like this when I run into, I mean, don't get me wrong, like it ugly shit happens between us periodically. I mean, I'm old enough to remember the early 90s, okay? Like I've got like no illusions about what these people are capable of. But this idea that like categorically like black folks are your ops, like that's like a weirdo take. Or that's like some like fucking sheltered take, man. Like I don't know. You know, like I said, I never, there's no reason why. I mean, moving forward, this basically was happening. Like blacks are there's a huge black migration back to the South, which is totally understandable. That's like the black heartland in America. Because like there's absolutely no reason why like we're like categorically at odds with black folks. They're gonna do like their shit, we're gonna do our shit. Like that's the way it's been literally for 500 years. You know, that's the way it'll be for 500 more.
Yeah, I think, you know, when oftentimes when these conversations happen, especially on X, and I try to stay out of them now. It's the same kind of reaction I have to a lot of religious debates now, where I'm like, to me, it's not a debate. I know my truth and I'm living my truth and, you know, God bless, do your thing. But, where I seem to get people hung up on, where people can really get hung up on these ideas, is that how much liberalism has infected everything. And by liberalism, I mean, I also mean Zionism. Like these two things have become almost intertwined, where you can't separate the two now. In fact, maybe Zionism is the most perfected form of liberalism. This idea of the internal liberation, the eternal revolution, to liberate man from both history, himself, God, state, religion, people, everything, into some sort of transhumanist state of, you know, I'm starting to see it's almost like transhumanism is for the goyim. But
I mean, the way I think basically, I mean, I'm the one who's always, I'm the first to admit, I don't think Mein Kampf, there's a lot to be gleaned from it other than as a historical artifact. But the chapter where Hitler talks about like if Bolshevism prevails, he paints a picture. He says like, imagine a planet like, you know, imagine planet Earth like reduced literally to like this kind of like wasteland of like no culture, where there's like people essentially like, you know, who are living like animals do, but with the power of speech, you know, ruled over by like a Jewish overcast. Like that's basically what regime ideology is. You know, like that's like I'm always objecting to people like, yeah, these people are Marxists. I'm like, no, they're not. I'm like, Marxists went away in 1989. They're not Marxists. They're not even really like left wing. Like it's like they're hostiles. So like anything that indexes with harming the people they hate, they're gonna be on board with. Like they're committed to this like kind of peculiar social engineering that's uniquely that uniquely debases the human soul. But like they're not sitting around like reading Das Kapital or like reading Thomas Paine and saying like, yeah, we need to overthrow, you know, the rule of money or the rule of, you know, the third estate, you know, and create this. Like they're not thinking that way. Like they're basically thinking it like all identitarian characteristics other than, you know, the ones that, you know, characterize us are illegitimate and should be eradicated. You know, like it's not legitimate for people to pursue their culture and wish to preserve it. You know, it's not like living historically is not legitimate. You know, like man exists to kind of serve this government. Government is an end in itself. You know, like it's really kind of the ideology of like an overlord caste that like can't really be a master caste because they lack the benevolence and kind of like the intellect. You know, it's in lieu of that, they've got like hostility, but like it's not really like right or left wing or like really like liberal. I mean, it's like why, like, and I mean, it's like why is flooding Ireland with immigrants and then we cleanse it like liberal, or like saying like we need to teach children that they're not boys or girls and that they can pick their gender? Like, what's like liberal about that? That's just crazy harmful stuff. You know, like it's like telling a guy to jump off a bridge when he's depressed isn't liberal. You're just like trying to hurt him. You know, I mean, it's like it's really kind of that simple. I mean, it really sounds funny, but yeah.
Well, no, I think that's important because in some ways we can always redeem the left. You know, and I know that by even just saying that people are going to spurg out, but by always making this into these two separate camps, we're missing the obvious play, which is we're being fucked with by a third party here. And as long as we're being fucked with a third party, there might be legitimate grievances and things to work out between left and right, or, you know, liberal, conservative, whatever, however you want to slice that pizza. But like, but we have to deal with this. Like, you know, it's suddenly the octopus meme makes a lot more sense to me, and why they were freaking out about Greta Thunberg having an octopus showing on her screen, right? A little autistic octopus. I'm like, yeah. Pretty much. Yeah, that's it. That's apropos, actually. So let's get to some solutions, Thomas, before we let you go. I know you're going to do some touring to our cadres out in the States. I'm trying to hopefully get back to the States in 2025.
Yeah, I'm trying to go over to Europe. Yeah. That seems to be a banner year for a lot of people.
Yeah, I'm going to hopefully do a bit of a tour if we can work that out.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So you've kind of touched on a few things about this, but let's say for technique, you know, keep your powder dry, obviously actively and defensively. We are not on the show advocating any kind of violence or any kind of first strikes on anybody here. Just to be very clear, for anyone who might be watching this at any time, no Fed posting allowed, but I think there are things we can do in terms of organizing. And it doesn't mean the classic organizing sense, like the left organizes into activist groups and then puts on pussy hats and makes an embarrassment on themselves in the streets. I think there's a range, right? What would you think would be some of the more effective methods people can start doing in the here and now if they're listening to the show, and then start building out to the future? I mean, what I'm doing,
we've got an entire community like down in Lynchburg that started to develop. I mean, it developed deliberately, but then kind of organically developed its own momentum. I mean, that's like, I'm going to start living down there half the year, man. Like, we've literally got an entire community of our own people, you know, whose kids are going to marry each other, who go to the same churches, you know, who help each other get jobs, you know, who facilitate people seceding from regime institutions while still sustaining like a decent, like kind of, you know, middle class quality of life. You know, like that's we're literally building like an alternative culture to anything to do with the regime. And it's happening spontaneously. like, we obviously we're like facilitating it, you know, by providing kind of like the organization and context, and like the social capital, you know, because we're, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I travel so much, is because like I visit, I want to visit our peoples who are doing this, like wherever they're at, but like it's already happening, you know, just like avail yourself to that and stop. And it's a psychological process. You got to stop thinking about, you got to stop caring like what randos who aren't part of us like think, you know, like you shouldn't care at all, like literally, you know, you got to stop thinking like, well, if I do this, I'm going to like lose money, or if I do this, I'm going to get fired. It's like, yeah, be smart. Don't be like a fuckhead or like make a spectacle of yourself or say dumb shit publicly. But it's easy as fuck to like make money these days, okay? If you've got a little bit of hustle and intellect, you know, so do it, and you know, quit system bullshit. I mean, that's all you have to do right now, okay? And let history and the historical process take care of the rest, and you know, like reach out and index with us or people adjacent to us, and if you're worthy of them, like they'll take you on with open arms.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the thing we've been saying on the channel, and what I'm trying to build out over the last few months, and certainly going to be being more direct in the next few months.
Yeah,
you know, with these ideas of like civilizational capital, social capital, you know, in terms of taking over towns and taking them, like just claiming them, they're ours now. This is ours. You know, it's what I've done. my running kind of gag or bit here on the channel is like, I've just taken Yiddish. It's like, that's my language now. You can come get it, but it's I'm just going to start peppering my language with Yiddish. Do a little bit of a mensch with it, and it's mine now. And it's not Jewish anymore. It's Jason's. So you can come get it if you want to, but you can't. So fuck off, right? And that's just like a little shot across the bow. And it's funny, but it's the same kind of mentality that you have to get yourself into, I think, which is like, we got to stop asking for permission.
Yeah.
And realize that there's a lot of other people who see the exact same thing we're seeing. Maybe not, it may not be fully, you know, they may have not have both feet in the boat, but they're certainly got one foot in there, and can be helpful and can be useful and can be used to start building these things so that our future generations have some places to go. And can start seeing the, you know, that these things are possible. Once you break the possibility sort of level, then people start to really kind of wake up a little bit. And it's just that kind of modeling of possibility that needs to be substantiated. And so, yeah, I thank you, Thomas, for your efforts with that. Anyone else who's doing the similar things. And of course, this channel will be more and more devoted to that as we go. Any last thoughts, Thomas, as we're coming up to the hour? I don't want to keep it too long.
No, I appreciate you hosting me. And like I said, it might seem like I'm not doing a whole lot now, but I'm actually like doing a bunch of shit. And like next week, there's some stuff I'll be able to announce I'm pretty excited about. So, and yeah, just I got some good stuff in the can, man. Just like people, and I want to express a lot of gratitude and love for people who like help me by subscribing and like throwing cash my way for what I do. Like, that's awesome. But I got good stuff in the can, and I think exciting stuff is afoot, especially as we come up on election season. So keep that in mind. But that's all I got, man.
Thank you for everyone for watching and listening. Like, share, subscribe, send us your money whenever way you want to. Sign up to Thomas's Substack. I have the links in the description below. And as always, Thomas, thank you very much. Appreciate you, man. Stick around.
Yeah, just life, man.
And we'll do a bit of vamping at the end. Thank you, folks. We'll talk to you again soon.